You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1. Registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, or 2. Solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor. Integrated Partners and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580. Welcome aboard. It's New Retirement Radio on WTCM with Prout Financial Design in Traverse City, Michigan, taking a look at your retirement. Joining us in the studio today, Heidi Cartwright from Prout Financial Design. Welcome aboard.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here, Ron. And what a beautiful summer day it is. And even though it's a beautiful summer day, I brought some of the crew along with me to join me on the show this morning. I have Nathan Prout, who is our managing director. Welcome, Nathan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's great to be here.
Yeah. And we also have Beth Shire, who is our director of marketing, and she's here to join us this morning as well.
Good morning. It's great to be here, and good morning to all you lovly listeners.
Lovely.
So we're so glad that all of you have chosen to be here with us this morning, and we want to encourage everyone to text in questions or call in questions if you would like. And Ron, how do they do that?
You can dial 231 area code, then 947-0023. You can text that number or call that number, 947-0023.
Last couple of weeks, we've been talking about the big subject of the big, beautiful bill. And that bill is big because it covers so many different things. And today we're going to touch on another part of that legislation and how it could affect you. And we're going to look at it from the side of Social Security. So this comes to us from the Ed Slot Group. And they're just talking about the big, beautiful bill. What does it mean for Social Security taxation? So the Big Beautiful Bill of 2025 was signed into law, and it has a wide-ranging budget reconciliation package aimed at advancing several of the different priorities that President Trump has laid out. But its actual impact on Social Security taxation has been widely misunderstood. So we are going to have a brief overview of how the bill affects Social Security, what it does not change, and how you can understand what is in all of that legislation. So to be clear, the bill did repeal federal income taxes on overtime and tips for taxpayers below a certain adjusted gross income threshold, but only temporarily, and with those provisions scheduled to expire after the tax year 2028. So that's for the overtime and tips section. But the promise to repeal federal income taxes on Social Security fell a little short of that kind of legislation because of the reconciliation rules. And those are the rules between passing a bill, between the Senate and the House and the whole process. I don't totally know all of those protocols, but because of that, they were prohibited to make changes to off-budget programs such as Social Security. So it could not repeal the taxation of benefits outright, Instead, it introduced a temporary additional deduction for seniors. So beginning in 2025, and that's this year, so this is going to affect people this year, this tax return, seniors age 65 and older may deduct up to $6,000 or $12,000 for joint filers. This deduction is reduced by 6% of modified adjusted gross income, or MAGI.
What's that mean? I get, so if you're over 65 within those income levels, 75 single, 120 married, you get your normal deduction, right? Which is what, about 32,000 for a couple?
Right. That's plus, your standard deduction.
Plus you get another 6,000 on top of that.
For single and 12,000 for joint.
12,000 for joint. And then what's this 6% stuff you mentioned?
So this 6% refers to a phase out. So between the income levels of 75,000 or over 75,000 up to 150,000, it's going to be phased out, and you're going to take 6% of the modified adjusted gross income. There's going to be a deduction from that full. So if you're single, let's start. If you're single and it's 6,000 and you make over 75,000, there's going to be a phase out where it's going to be reduced up to the point where you make 150,000, and then there is no deduction for those making over that amount. Is that easier? That's probably easier, right?
Right.
I think that's a little easier.
Easy is a strong word, but.
So this applies after adjusted gross income is calculated and is in addition, like we just said, to the standard deduction, and does not lower your other your MAGI, or that modified adjust income, for purposes of calculating income-related monthly adjustment amount, commonly known as IRMA. So what they're saying is, even though you get this deduction, it's not necessarily going to change some of the parameters that other charges are based on, like, you know, whether your Social Security is taxed, how much are the benefits taxed, whether it's at 0, 50, or 80% of the benefits. It's also not going to affect some of the other triggers for additional taxes for IRMA or other programs. So it's just going to come off.
So the only thing affecting Social Security recipients in the new bill, the one big beautiful bill, is they get an extra $6,000 deduction for a single, or $12,000 for a couple,
as long as they're under those income limits.
All right.
So the Commissioner of Social Security, Frank Bisignano, I think is how you say his name, said about the law that it eliminates federal income taxes on Social Security benefits for most beneficiaries, providing relief to individuals and couples. But in truth, the statutory framework governing the taxation of Social Security is going to remain unchanged. The new deduction is a temporary tax benefit, not a structural policy shift. Because of the Byrd rule that prohibits changes to Social Security benefit formula or trust fund financing in the reconciliation legislation, the campaign era pledge to eliminate benefit taxation could not be enacted by the bill. So, you know, when they say it's eliminating taxes on Social Security or no taxes on Social Security, technically, in the way the math works, that's not it. It's giving you this deduction if you're over 65. So nice and clear, right? So the big bill does not introduce any changes to Medicare benefits, cost sharing, or eligibility, nor does it alter Medicaid funding or rules. Although Medicaid funding has not been touched in this bill does remove illegal aliens and enforces work requirements for able-bodied adults. So while the bill provides a temporary tax benefit for many seniors, it does not repeal taxation of Social Security benefits, nor does it offer relief for higher income retirees seeking to reduce Medicare premiums or surcharges. So there is some relief, which is going to help a lot of people, but it is a limited group that will be affected by it, and you may not be, or you may be able to take advantage of this depending on your particular circumstance.
Well, could that possibly move someone into a lower tax bracket? I don't know what the brackets are, but if, say, you're a couple and you make less than $150,000 a year, mm-hmm. you take your approximate $32,000 standard deduction, and that lowers your earnings, right? You're adjusted. Then another $6,000 off of that, right?
Yeah.
Could that drop you into a lower tax bracket? Do you know offhand?
Well, wasn't the article just saying that that $6,000 and $12,000 does not lower your adjusted gross income?
Correct. So it's really a deduction of what you have to pay, from what I understand.
Yeah. It's a deduction. So it doesn't lower your adjusted gross income.
Let's go back.
So if you owe...
Double check here. Yeah, so it applies after your adjusted gross income is calculated.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't then take another hit on your adjusted gross income. So it's not confusing at all, Ron.
Yeah. All right. When's Sluice coming in?
Actually, we do. Yes. Yeah, we have. Tell us about our guest coming up.
All right.
Take the pressure off. Okay, so let's see. Next week we have Lacey Edgecombe coming from the Traverse City Senior Center, and she's going to talk about the different programs that they have, networking and different things like that. I haven't been over there, Heidi. I think, did you go over there?
And the Senior Center.
I did, and
it is beautiful. Yeah. What a beautiful new facility. And my favorite part was this porch on the back that overlooks the bay, mm-hmm. and it just has a whole bunch of rocking chairs out there. It looked a really nice place to spend an afternoon or just relax and talk with friends.
That's great. And then we do have, John Sluice coming. He's going to be here September 18th, and he's going to dive more into the big, beautiful bill
and
taxation and different things like that. So I'm sure he's been very busy with that piece of legislation.
And that's what we're finding as we research some of these offerings in the big, beautiful bill. There's a lot of positive things out there for people, but there is a lot of complexity as well as how you qualify and how you take that and when it's going to affect other programs that are tied to your income taxes. So it is adding complexity, but maybe with some benefits. But,
it's funny. We were talking about even the Trump accounts a little bit this morning, too. And we'll talk about that more later, I'm sure. But our first pass through, it appears that they have some rules that would normally apply to a Roth and some rules that would normally apply to an IRA. And even though they're eligible for anybody like born this year, you can't make any contributions till July of next year. So it's just all of these
little nuances.
Nothing seems super easy or clear so far as what's introduced.
Those accounts, the Trump accounts, is the federal government starting those off with $1,000?
Yes. And then for anybody born, it's between 2025 and I believe the end of 2028.
Like retroactive here.
Yeah.
So then you can add on to it, obviously. Anybody can donate to those accounts.
Yeah, even employers can contribute on behalf of an employee as well.
So, wow.
So we'll get into that. I do have a little...
There's a lot of nuances about that.
Yeah. I do have a little article here on it, and it just says that Trump accounts provide a one-time contribution of $1,000 from the federal government for U.S. babies born from 2025 to 2028. Depending on how much is invested and how well the stock market performs, the accounts can grow substantially over time. But like Nathan was indicating, there's a lot of extra rules behind that statement that we're still digging into, but we will address all these different topics over the coming months.
Yeah. The withdrawal provisions continue to look a little messy on that as well. So it's once the child turns 18, but then any earnings are subject to the normal 10% early withdrawal penalty and taxes as well. So it's
a little crazy.
Theoretically.
You have to really be ready to track your cost basis on these things, too.
Can you do on your, I see you have your calculator there.
So if someone, it's always with me, Ron.
If someone started with $1,000, which they will, because even if nobody contributes, the federal government gives you $1,000.
Right.
It, for 18 years at, I don't know, what's a fair conservative interest rate?
We could do like 7%, okay. If you think.
Yeah.
So future value, that would be... $410,000.
No way.
That's wild.
Yeah, way.
Yeah.
Over 18 years.
Sorry. Let me double check. Let me check. Nope. Sorry. Nope. That's wrong.
That's more wrong. Like retirement age.
Right.
Yeah. So let's see. We said 7% interest, 18 mm-hmm. years.
Yep.
Future value. That is $3,300.
Oh, so. $3,300. Yeah. Well, that's a lot lower than I thought.
Yeah. That now. If you did $1,000 payment to that every year.
Yeah. If you add $1,000 every year.
Because you can add stuff yourself, money yourself.
That would grow to $37,378.
And grandparents or employers or other mm-hmm. people can throw money in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I think it has a maximum contribution every year of $5,000. Is that right, Heidi?
I think so.
I believe so.
So if you were to max out the payments and it did earn that 7%, again, assuming it started with that $1,000, that would get you to $173,000. Yeah, so
there's the potential when someone turns 18 to have some money to start off with.
But again, too, those withdrawals then, any earned interest you would be taxed on and have to pay a 10% early withdrawal penalty. So again, you could access the cost basis of that, which would still be significant, but we'll dive more into some of those provisions as well.
And just to be clear on that, the federal government makes a one-time contribution of 1,000. Families can also contribute up to $5,000 a year, with employers allowed to chip in up to $2,500 of that amount. So the $5,000, I think,
the $5,000 is a hard cap. Yeah.
So we did have a question on the $6,000 deduction for people over 65. Someone says to get the new deduction of $6,000, which is a single, or $12,000 for a couple, you have to have an income between $75,000 and $150,000?
No, under $75,000. There's a phase-out range between $75,000 and $150,000. And then if you're over $150,000, you're sort of out of luck.
All right. So if you're a couple and your income's under $150,000, you get the deduction.
Right. And then that phase-out for a couple goes from $150,000 all the way up to $250,000, I believe.
That's correct. Okay. $250,000.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Another question for the gang here. Will this affect the actual value of our dollar? And when you can, well, that's a hypothetical. I guess with all that government putting $1,000 in all those accounts, will this affect the actual value of our dollar? Is that going to be an inflation thing where the money's not in the economy, right? It'll be in some kind of account.
That is correct. It has to be invested in a low-cost stock mutual fund or ETF tracking the U.S. stock market index.
Well, and if I don't remember if this was a conversation or an article I was reading earlier this week, but it was talking about the ways to get out of debt. Mm-hmm. And the first option, which nobody ever wants to do, is actually cut spending.
Right. Doesn't seem to be Congress's favorite, that's for sure.
But for the government specifically, too, the second option is to inflate out of it. So sort of devalue the dollar and then make those debt payments a little more sustainable, as well as a combination, ideally, of the third option, which is to continue to increase GDP. But hopefully it's more towards the latter than the former, but partially inflating out of the debt problem might be part of the government's strategy. I don't know. Who knows what they're thinking? That's too deep for this radio show.
How many kids are born this year or every year, and you say $1,000 for each one of them is being put into an account is different than saying, we're going to give the $1,000 to the family to go spend.
Right. That's true.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
Which would probably cause some inflation, right?
Right. Good. But there's also some other little tweaks, too. Like they're increasing the child tax credit a little bit for the first time, like since it came out, actually due to inflation. So there's some other tweaks coming through. But ultimately, yes, you could say that this will affect the actual value of the dollar because it is putting even more inflationary pressure on it.
But there's so many elements out there in the marketplace that affect the value of the dollar. You have foreign elements, foreign currency, you have inflation, there's so many different things that go into that to say that this is the reason or this will cause it to go up. It all depends on the other forces in play on the currency valuation. So it's really difficult to just narrow down to one thing because there's just so many things that affect it.
Right. And it could honestly just be them trying to increase the birth rates because there's been a lot of news out there recently about how the population isn't keeping up and how people are having less and less babies. But I don't know. If $1,000 does that for you, that's a different discussion, too.
So I thought I would just introduce something not about the BBB bill, the big, beautiful bill, because there was a letter that was written into the Ed Slott newsletter that I thought was interesting about Social Security, so I thought I'd read that. It says, "Hi, I'm currently single and will turn age 62 in September and plan to file for Social Security benefits based on my ex-spouse's record. We were married for 28 years. We divorced 3 years ago. He is age 67, but I'm unsure whether he has filed for his benefits. I know he is still working and has a high income. My questions are, how can I determine the amount I can collect under his record without having to ask him directly? And if he continues working after I begin receiving benefits, will my benefit increase if his benefit increases due to additional earnings because he's still working?" So there's a lot of issues in here. But the answer is you do not need to contact your ex-spouse to find out how much you could receive under his record. The maximum divorce spousal benefit is 50% of his primary insurance amount, which is the amount he would collect at his full retirement age. To determine your potential benefit, you would contact Social Security and request an estimate of your divorced spousal benefit. The Social Security requires your marriage certificate and your divorce decree to confirm that you meet the 10-year marriage requirement. Because your ex-spouse is over age 62, you have been divorced for at least 2 years, you are unmarried now, and you are considered independently entitled, meaning you can claim based on his record even if he has not filed for benefits. If you qualify for a retirement benefit, Social Security will pay the higher of your retirement benefit or the divorced spousal benefit, not both combined. Additionally, if you file at age 62 as planned, your benefit will be permanently reduced for claiming before your full retirement age. Your benefit could increase if your ex-spouse continued to work and it results in higher earnings that replace lower earning years in his 35 Social Security history. Because of your divorce, spousal benefits is calculated as a percentage of his PIA, any increase to his PIA would also raise your benefit. And the PIA is that personal income amount that they figure out for based on your history of your earnings. So if his income amount goes up, then yours would as well, even though it's half of what his benefit is. So I thought this hit a lot of questions that we get, especially in divorce situations. Social Security has a lot of different ways you can do claim your own, claim a spousal benefit, as long as you meet the criteria out there. So
that takes a lot of management workers. I mean, that's just one person, you know, that has to get all the paperwork and run it through someone across the desk from them or
yeah. The case studies get even more interesting when it's a person who's been married for more than 10 years multiple times, too.
Yes, that can add to complexity right there.
All right, let's go to the phone here on New Retirement Radio. Amity from Maple City is on the line. Good morning, Amity.
Hi, good morning, gang. I love your program. I have two questions. I think I picked up on the end of when you were talking about distribution. Ron was talking about, say you have $2,000 you owe the government, you can give $1,700 to a school. Is that primary schools or can it be universities also?
That's, from what I read, it's K through 12. It's not universities, and it's they have to be a scholarship granting institution. That means they have to have a scholarship program. So
okay,
but we'll have somebody on next week to go through the details of that part of the One Big Beautiful Bill.
Well, okay. we'll talk about the different provisions of the Big Beautiful Bill. It may be over the next several weeks because there's so many.
Yeah. Okay. The other question is: my wife turns 72 in October. What is it, this year or next year, that she has to start taking the minimum distributions?
The required minimum distribution for IRAs, traditional
Correct.
IRAs and 401ks.
Correct.
The age right now is 73. That was changed in Secure 2.0. Anyone who's born in 1960 and later, their RMD age will be 75. So right now we're at age 73.
Okay. So if just for an argument case, if she was turning 73 this October, it would be this year that she would have to start taking the distribution, or would it be?
It would be this year, yeah.
This year, okay.
Yeah, but because it's her first RMD year, she would technically have till April of next year to satisfy this year's RMD, but then you're in a double RMD situation for next year. So.
Yes. And if you were already taking money out of that IRA, just as regular living expenses, all you have to do is take more out just to reach that minimum amount, correct?
No, that's incorrect, actually. First dollars out of your IRA after you are RMD age always count towards your RMD. So
yes, okay, yep, it does count.
You can always take out more.
You can take out more, yes, that's right.
So so if you're under your RMD amount with your systematic distributions, then yes, you'd have to take an additional amount. But if you're over with that systematic amount coming out every month, if you're over the RMD, you don't have to take anything additional.
Right. And if you have to take more, you can just take it and reinvest it, correct?
Correct.
You as could long as you pay taxes on it.
That's what they want.
That's what
the
they
taxes.
Want, yep.
But you can put it in an individual account, a joint account, a trust account, any non-qualified type of investment.
Yep. Okay, very good. All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Amity. So we have a few questions for the panel here today. This goes back to the changes in the Big Beautiful Bill, the additional deduction for people over 65. Someone says, so if you are over 65, you make less than $75,000 and you're single, you will receive the standard deduction plus the $6,000 new deduction. Is that right? And I'm lost on the 6% phase out, they say.
Well, it looks like the phase out won't apply to you, so don't worry about that. But yes, from our understanding, you will receive the standard deduction and that $6,000 new deduction.
And that's for this calendar year,
and,
too.
And the standard deduction this year for single is $15,000. So.
All right. So you'll get $21,000 deduction there for this year. That's for a single.
Yeah. And if you're over age 65, now does this go towards the normal extra standard deduction as well, for that $2,000 for single? So does the $6,000 add to that?
I would assume you get both of those.
Yeah, so you'd get an additional $8,000 in addition to your standard deduction, I believe. So
at tax time, obviously you want to consult an expert.
Yeah, there's so many changes this year. It may not hurt to review with a tax professional so that you make sure that you're taking advantage of anything that you are eligible for.
Here's a question. It says, I am 62, collecting Social Security. My ex-wife and I were married for 17 years. She turned 62 next May. I asked Social Security about collecting on her income, and I was told she was to be making a boatload of money, which I'm pretty sure her income is about average. Is there a max or a minimum for me to pursue getting a Social Security check through her? So this it sounds like a spousal thing that we had that question you had, Heidi.
Right.
If you're divorced.
If you're divorced, you are entitled to your spousal benefit, just like people who are married, as long as you were married for at least 10 years.
Okay.
And a spousal benefit is half of what the individual's benefit is at full retirement age. But then those deductions kick in if you take it before your full retirement age. So if you're 62, you're going to be getting a reduced amount of that spousal benefit. So it adds up.
You've got to go to Social Security and ask them.
Right. Yeah. And before you want to pursue that one too, would 50% of her benefit be more than your full benefit, which is technically reduced right now for the early filing of 62.
So just keep in mind, if you take any Social Security benefit prior to your full retirement age, it will be there will be a reduction from the full benefit that you would have gotten if you wait till full retirement age before you claim.
Yeah.
So, and here's we won't have the answer. Interesting question. I don't think we have the answer for this, but it said, is that $1,000 Trump account available for a baby adopted by U.S. citizen parents, but a baby that was born in another country between January 25th, December 28th? Hmm. So the quick question, are adopted kids included? I would that's it. We'll have to look that up. If you have a baby this calendar year, you get the $1,000 deposited in the Trump account. If you adopt a baby, whether domestic or foreign, does that count? I don't know.
I don't know off the top of my head. We'll let Heidi research that while start our next topic. Oh, wait. It looks like we have another question as well.
Let's see. I did not hear what you said about an extra $2,000 added to deductions for a single 66-year-old, $1,500 deduction plus $6,000 deduction. Where's the $2,000 come from?
Yeah. So there's... So you got your single standard deduction, which is $15,000. It's actually a little higher this year. It's going to be $15,500. Is that right, Heidi?
For a single.
Yeah. And then there's before the One Big Beautiful Bill passed, there was an extra standard deduction for anybody over age 65 or blind, which was $2,000 for a single person. But with the One Big Beautiful Bill, I believe you'll get an additional $6,000 on top of that. It could be replacing the extra standard deduction that was there. I'm unclear on that. But if it's not, you'd basically have a total deduction of $23,500 approximately.
Yeah. So you still get, you get all those deductions.
Right.
Jackpot. All right. Let's see. When do the changes in the Big Beautiful Bill take effect? The $1,000 Trump
account? It depends on which one you're talking about. So some of them take effect this year. Some of them don't start till the 2026 tax year. So
The Trump account, you said, for babies born this year, right?
Yeah, the Trump account is anybody born this year through 2028. But you're not allowed to start contributing to the Trump account until July 4th of 2026.
The $6,000 or $12,000 additional deduction for people over 65, do you know, is that for this tax year?
That's for this tax
year. Okay.
Yep.
And finally, I contributed $6,000 to my 401. I pay income tax on withdrawals, but shouldn't withdrawals beyond $60,000 be capital gains?
I'm guessing the second number there, you meant to say 6,000.
Okay.
But yeah, the way it works, because that would be nice, but no. So because all of the money that went in, assuming you are talking about a normal pre-tax 401k, Because none of that money has been taxed yet, once that money comes out, all of it has to be taxed, whether it's basis or earned interest in that case. Now, if it's a Roth or a post-tax 401k, you'd have your five-year limitation for the contribution. So, but anything after that, you'd be able to take out without taxes. But you could always access your basis without any taxes on those Roth contributions. So,
all right, let's see what else do we have here on the program today.
All right. I'm going to start quickly before we get more questions. But so this next topic that we're going to get into is called micro-retirements. So today's workplace is far from traditional. It's dynamic, evolving, and anything but business as usual. So from remote or hybrid work to flexible schedules, side hustles, and the new growing trend, micro-retirement, younger generations are embracing change, and it's Gen Z who are leading the charge. This comes to us from Kiplinger, by the way. Even though the term may be unknown to some employers and employees, micro-retirement isn't new. Academia has been taking sabbaticals or leaves for decades to study and for research. Jillian Johnsard, author of Retire Often, has written about mini retirements for over a decade, and some believe the term was popularized by Timothy Ferris in his book, The 4-Hour Workweek, over 15 years ago. So what is micro retirement? It's all about taking short, regular breaks from work, typically lasting a few weeks to a few months. The time off is usually taken to travel, work on a personal project, or relax, with a plan to return to the job afterward. Unlike traditional retirement, micro-retirement is not a permanent exit strategy, but a deliberate pause often used by younger workers, especially millennials and Gen Z.
By the way, Gen Z right now are 13 to 28 years old. So you're talking about people in their 20s here.
Yeah.
Taking micro-retirement.
Yeah, and I don't know how that fully works. Is it like people maybe still living with a roommate or with their parents? Yeah, but yeah, saving money aggressively is also a trend, especially too with Gen Z and millennials. So just like retirement, many people financially plan for micro-retirement to ensure they have the proper funds in place to support their time away from work.
You said, one of you all, said standard is $14,500. That would be 15,500. Did you misspeak? Did you mean 50? I don't get it. I'm sorry.
How about we just say what the standard deduction is?
So the standard deduction for somebody who's single this tax year is 15,000. I believe the One Big Beautiful Bill just adjusted that to 15,500.
Okay.
I cannot confirm.
But we'll hold at 15,000 for now, just because we don't want to misspeak here. So going back to the question, so you'd have your standard deduction of 15,000. If you are over the age of 65 and single, you get an additional deduction. Now, this was before the One Big Beautiful Bill, of $2,000. So we're up to 17,000. We believe the way the One Big Beautiful Bill, or our interpretation of it, now this might be incorrect, but we believe that adds another $6,000 to that $17,000. So bringing your total standard deduction for a single person over the age of 65 up to $23,000.
As long as they're under $75,000.
Yeah, when you get your tax forms, when tax time comes around, the tax forms will be updated and you answer the questions. If you do your taxes yourself, or if you go to a preparer, they'll be able to walk you through it. But we're not going to figure it out on the radio with all these theoreticals. So you do get an extra $6,000 deduction.
At the very least, if you're under $75,000, you should be getting $21,000 total in standard deductions.
Right.
And making under $75,000. Yep.
Website, proutfinancialdesign.com. Thank you, Heidi Cartwright.
Thank you,
R-I-P-C.
R-I-C-P.
R-I-C-P.
R-I-C-P. retired income certified professional.
Very
Nathan
good.
Prout, a financial planner, advisor.
Advisor, yeah.
Beth Shire, our director of marketing.